Ladies and gentlemen, please join me to welcome Julián Llucet and Vincent Pereira. Yes, all yours.
Hi. Yes. Hi, everyone. Thank you to be here. This morning, when we were just waiting the Uber to come to SoccerX with Julian, we were thinking about the first time when we saw Tabuzo live. I was spending a game just behind them. When Zlatan scored a goal, we were all celebrating, cheering about this goal. But them, Julian and his team, was really be focused on their computer, on Photoshop, just doing a visual, just saving a visual, uploading it on Twitter, on Facebook. And then just 2 minutes before, there is a visual online, but that was really sweating. So this is about SoLive. SoLive is a real-time solution, a social media publishing tool dedicated to sports industry. So we will not have enough time to answer to all the questions. So do not hesitate to catch us on Twitter with this hashtag #AskSoLive, or visit us on our stand, and we will answer, of course, during these 3 days. So I will introduce you our favorite clients. I'm saying that because I'm really expecting a resign next year about SoLive. But let me introduce you just Julián Llucet, the digital marketing manager of the Paris Saint-Germain.
Thank you. So I'm glad to be back in the UK. I mean, the last time I came was for the game against Chelsea with Paris Saint-Germain, so you might remember it. So I wanted to talk about something that happened in April last year. As you may know, or maybe you don't, when we were only 8 games away from the end of the championship, it was really a tight race. You can see we are number one, but there are only 5 points between number one and number four. So we thought, okay, this is a great opportunity to tell a good story. We should do some storytelling, some brand content around that. How do we do that? Well, at the same time, we were lucky because something big happened. It was the release of the new season of Game of Thrones. And it's a big event. It's a worldwide event. It's the same target we have. So that we say, okay, what can we do about that? So we did something in 3 steps. And this is step number one. So this is a tweet we wrote on this very day. And it says in French something like, oh, I'm so happy. Tomorrow is the release of Game of Thrones. It came from our official account. And everybody thought it was a fail from our community manager. So people got crazy. They were like, wow, WTF. Oh my God, what are they doing? What is the guy doing with his phone? He must be lost somewhere. He's talking about Game of Thrones. What's the meaning of all of that? And we top trended on Twitter with that, which was exactly what we wanted, because this was our next step. So we got millions of views on this video. So we kept on going. This was the next step. We're like, okay, for the last 8 games, we will use this campaign and capitalize on it, tell the story, our Game of Thrones story. We did it for the game. We did it when we won the titles. We got new fans all over the world. We got great comments from Australia, Asia, South America, you name it. That worked. This is what we are about. This is what I want you to remember about Paris Saint-Germain. We want to be one of the top 10 franchises, sport franchises in the world in the next 5 to 10 years. We are building that, and we are doing it with two big things: entertainment, this is what it is about, and international. And if you think about it, what I just showed you, Game of Thrones, it's entertaining, it's international, it's our target market, that's where we want to be. So all our actions, and you will see more coming in a few weeks, and you will remember that, I promise. And just to finish, I will show you some example of the campaigns we did that are also about entertainment. There is a campaign we did when we faced Chelsea. There is a campaign we did in the movie theaters in France. There is a campaign about our 1 million fans on Instagram. This is what it is. So this was against Chelsea. This is after winning.
Au Parc des Princes, je suis passé par toutes les émotions possibles et imaginables ici. Un match du Paris Saint-Germain, ça se regarde pas, ça se vit.
So this is what we do. 1 year ago, I saw a speech from my good friend Glenn Miller, who will be speaking. I don't know if he's around, maybe behind. He will be speaking later, but he said something about that was very interesting. He told me, well, I like what you are doing at Paris Saint-Germain. It's entertaining. It gets people engaged. But your weakest part are the games. I mean, 90% of your audience is international, and they get engaged during the games. What are you doing during the games? I saw the Game of Thrones, I saw the movie theater, everything. What is it you can do? And this is why we are working with Solive.
So as I already told you, Solive is the best real-time solution to cover the live on social media. So let's just have a quick look at about what you could do if you were using Solive. As Alex said just a few minutes ago...
Vincent?
Yes?
That wasn't planned, right? I never saw that slide.
Why?
I'm your favorite customer, right?
Yes,
you are. Isn't that about Paris Saint-Germain?
Yes, but we're in Manchester, so Eric Cantona, the king.
I mean, we won against Chelsea, and so it's about us, right?
Maybe it's better.
Yeah.
Okay. So, as Alex said a few minutes ago, the creative content is the key to engage more, to create some interaction with your community. So Live helps you to just be focused on your content and not focusing on some task that you take you sometimes, and like we explained before with Photoshop during the game. So you are really being focused on your content. So if I were to define Live Jose, so Live in three words, I would say it's simple. When you are watching a game where Andrea Pirlo or Steven Gerrard is making a 50 meters long pass, what are you thinking about? It seems really easy. And that really wanted to do with so Live. The best tool ever, and with the most simple user interface for the community managers. Then it's powerful, because simple does not mean that is not powerful. Our heart of the tool is really efficient to help you and to give you the possibility to publish all the visual in all the languages, in all the platform, in a matter of seconds. So today, nobody is doing the same thing that so Live is doing today. We are able to publish the visual in all the languages, every language, in all the platforms, in a matter of seconds, without any constraints of designs. So let's have a quick look at so Live. So first of all, you have to connect yourself. Then you have to set up a match. I take the Paris Saint-Germain account to do this demo. Then you have to choose the competition first. Then you can select a match. And then you enter a dedicated hashtag for Twitter. You have three possibilities: the early and post-match, then the match part, and then the push business. If we take the match part, you have 5 steps. In 50 seconds, you could publish a visual directly on social media. I take goal. I enter the timing, first half time, 27 minutes. Of course, I choose Zlatan, because you know Julian likes Zlatan. For the media, I just have to choose where I want to push my visual. For the moment, Twitter and Facebook are available, and I will talk later about the other networks. And then you enter and you focus yourself on the content that you want to push on social media. You have a preview to really be sure about what are you posting on the social media, and then you will publish directly to have a look about what is... seems to be on Twitter or on Facebook. So Live is celebrating its first anniversary in a few days. So we are working hard on the version 2.0 that will be out in a few weeks. For sure, beyond the new key match that we worked with...
Thanks for this picture.
Welcome. About the new features that we are working with the Paris Saint-Germain, because we worked with them a lot to improve the tool. We are integrating new key match custom options, but we have some big announcement to do about the features. So we are adding social platforms, because we want to go everywhere. So Live is like clubs, it's like brands, it's like everyone here. We want to go international, we want to go everywhere. So that's why we will include Sina and Tencent Weibo to help the clubs, help the brands to achieve these goals in China too. So everybody knows that Instagram is taking a big part of the social engagement today. So everybody remember Cristiano Ronaldo taking his picture with his son, was showing their muscle in the bathroom. So that's the same for the clubs and for the brands. So that's why we are working hard with Facebook and Instagram to waiting the opening of the API of Instagram. That's the same thing. We won't want to go everywhere. We want to offer the most opportunity and the possibilities to the club and to our customers. So that's why we integrate Google Plus into the tool. Today, you have this. You have to invest and promote your messages to reach all your communities on Facebook and Twitter. That's why so Live needs to integrate and to simplify the process by integrating, implementing the Twitter ads platforms and the Facebook ads platforms into our tool. So in three clicks, you have the possibility to directly promote your post on Facebook or on Twitter. That's something more easy for you.
But that's very important because if you are, if you think about one of our big games, or let's say you beat Chelsea in the Champions League and you want to promote, so you post something about that, what would happen would be like, we know the reach on Facebook, Twitter, and so you won't reach all of your fans. So you want to promote that post to reach your whole community. So what I would do is I would post it, and then I would call my agency at night and say, hey, can you promote that post? And it's 11 at night, and they're not answering. And I get crazy because they promoted the next day, and I lost all the impact of it. So that's why we ask them to say, okay, if we score a goal, can we post it and promote it right away, which I think is very important to us.
So Solive will be like Carlo Ancelotti. Solive will speak 7 languages alone and more. We are creating default sentences. It's not like Google Translate. We are really creating some different content and specific content to allow you to cover a match in one language, but with the possibility to show all the visual in all the other platforms. I explained myself. For example, I'm a community manager. I'm covering the game for the England team tomorrow at night. I will publish all the visual in English, but if I have a Chinese account, a French account, a Spanish account, I have the possibility to display all the visual, to send all the visual with specific and default sentences for our communities, for your communities in all these countries.
Again, that was very important to us because 2 million of our fans are in Indonesia and our games are not broadcasted in Indonesia, which is quite amazing. We are not in the Premier League, unfortunately, for that reason. So if you think about it, you have 2 million fans and they have no way to access our content, our games. So I want my team to be able to push, to post something on the Indonesian network when we score a goal, when we win the game, and this is why we ask for that specific development. We didn't want Google Translate because we know it's going to be, we're going to have some problems with that. So we are charging default sentences, loading default sentences in the tool, and we can promote it then.
In the idea to merge the marketing strategy, the digital strategy, the marketing experience, the stadium experience in the digital one, we're integrating the possibility to have some kind of media like the giant screen or the dynamic screen that you will have in all the area of a stadium. We know that everyone is on his mobile phone when he is watching a game, just watching on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Even Totti is taking a selfie when he scores a goal. So the mobile is really important for the community managers too. So we will have the native mobile apps in the version 2.0 for the community manager near to the pitch when the warm-up is coming. They could publish a photo and directly send it to the social networks with Solive. Solive is running with Opta, which is the data provider of a lot of clubs, a lot of federation. We are really close to them. We are working a lot to making more and more with the data, more and more with the stats. Opta is clearly something that helps us to go with a most simple tool for the community manager. As a World Web did during 4 years, we are just to conclude this presentation in 3 times. So if you have to remind something, Solive is about more audiences. You have the possibility to address all your communities in their own languages, in all the social platforms in few weeks. It's about fan engagement because you are posting some visual content in their own languages and you will have more interaction and you can focus yourself on all the content and all the history that you want to tell to your customers. And then it's about business, because you don't see in the presentation that we are also giving the possibility for the clients to put some business push into the application. So I imagine if Zlatan is scoring a goal, Julien can publish a post with a visual announcing a 5% discount on a Zlatan jersey. So you have the possibility to make that for the merchandising offer, for ticketing offer, or for promoting some of your content, like the HAP content. We show the Rush in Paris, which is a game of the Paris Saint-Germain in the mobile apps. So you have the possibility to push some business actions from SoLive.
That's one thing about that, because yes, you can already do that with Photoshop. I mean, you could go, I think probably some of you are doing that if you work for teams, is you score a goal, you go to Photoshop, you sweat because your computer is running around like that, and you can publish it. And it's the same thing for a business push. I mean, when Zlatan scores a goal, I could go and work on my image and post it, but it's just saving you a lot of time, a lot of complications, so you can focus on your message instead of focusing on the size of the image or what it is looking at that is great for your brand. So that's really... And for us, that's what it's changing a lot, because we get to think more about, okay, I have more time to focus on what is really important. I know the image is perfect, it looks good, it conveys the great values of my brand. Now I can focus on the content. Like I did on Game of Thrones, now I can do it for the game.
So thank you very much for your time. I think, Oscar, we finished on the time.
Yes. On time, exactly, precise. Swiss.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, tomorrow at night we'll cover the English, the England game to show you how SoLive could be powerful for example, for the English Federation.
Yes. I don't know if now there is a question from the audience. Someone then? Yes? No? Well, I have one fast question. There is this. What is the next step for you? Because with all these things can be commodities in some time. Everyone can have maybe the opt-out or the pictures of everything. What is the next step regarding enhanced content? For example, you have a very good relationship your company with your broadcaster.
Right.
Are there something that maybe we are talking about in some moment start using highlights or videos from the matches or something like that? That's maybe the future also for this type of thing?
Yeah, we think, I mean, then it's a question of TV rights and what you can or cannot do. But we were talking about that with Vincent when we saw Alex from Twitter, talking about showing the example of Fenerbahce and how they do the lineup. I think we've been thinking about that a lot. Like when we score a goal, right now we are pushing this image that you saw that says goal with Zlatan. But maybe tomorrow we could put a video of just the taken live from the crowd. Because you cannot show the field, but just that, just people like jumping around in the stadium, but live, mm-hmm. and push it on all our social networks. So we are thinking about mm-hmm. that. We are trying to move from text. We moved already from text to image, and the next step might be to move from image to video.
Okay. But try to give around to your broadcasting rights, not to confront them. Okay.
Yes.
That's very interesting. Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. This is going to be around, so please, again, approach them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Here you have. Well, our next guest is a real insider of these social media things. Okay, with so much content being produced nowadays, it doesn't matter how big a football club is. The conversation is always going to be bigger and uncontrollable. That's why it's so important to find ways to start and shape the conversation around our clubs, players, events, and brands. Social Chain is an expert in that area. At the largest influencer marketing agency in the UK, it manages hundreds of online sport communities and have the ability to make 180 million people see and start talking about a specific player, team, or sporting event while controlling the narrative. To talk about this, we have Steve Bartlett, founder and managing director of the Social Chain. As someone who knows about the nature of digital projects and new media, he is focused on growth hacking, product development, viral marketing, and generally asking the right questions. That's a very scarce mix nowadays. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Steve Bartlett.
Thank you,
Steve. Please.
No? Is that better? Cool. My name's Steve Bartlett. I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders of Social Chain, which is Europe's not-so-secret anymore largest influencer marketing agency. And I'm here today to tell you our story and about some cool things we've done recently. So we have over 181 million people at our fingertips who we can reach across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Up until recently, the story of the social chain was a secret, We get over 1 billion impressions on just one of our communities alone, and we run all the biggest social media community pages in the UK. We'd started 34 national trends last month alone, 12 worldwide trends. And the reason we're not a secret anymore is because a couple of months ago, BuzzFeed found out we existed, and they made us the number one article on BuzzFeed.com and .co.uk. They talked about us, they called us the social media Illuminati, likened us to having a bigger impact on the youth market than the likes of Rupert Murdoch. And their article, the headline of it was How Social Chain is Secretly Taking Over Twitter. In the same week, Vice News picked up on the story, and BBC Radio 1, BBC News, The Times, Forbes, MEN, BBC Radio 4. That's me in my hat in the Sunday Times at the end of that same week. And the production companies came down to our office in the same week. Fremantle came down and asked if they could do a documentary on us, and then Burning Bright Productions came down and wanted to do a piece called The Influencers, where they put a fixed rig in our office. And when BuzzFeed came down to our office, they came armed with this quote: the kids that claim they can make anything the number one trend on Twitter in less than half an hour. And it's, we don't sell trends. There's no, to us, there's no inherent value in just a trend alone, but we can do something which does have inherent value, which is get hundreds of thousands of people to talk about virtually anything at once on social media. And so BuzzFeed challenged us. They said, go on then. Not one to turn down a challenge, we accepted it. And so we got to work. They gave us a hashtag. They wanted us to make the number one trend on social media. And we did our thing. And here's what happened. Here's what they wrote at the top of the article. It takes 26 minutes for the staff at Social Chain to push this hashtag to the top trend on Twitter. When it died down later, 40,000 people had tweeted about it. And it became a huge trending topic. It was number one in the UK's trending topic list. So that's 40,000 tweets, 26 minutes. Pretty impressive, right? The secret group of kids that choose what all the other kids are talking about. And we knew we were coming here today, and we always like to blow people away. So last night we're sat in the office, we're thinking, what can we do for SoccerX to wow the audience? And so we had a little bit of fun. And it's not the most honest thing we've ever done, but I hope you'll forgive us nonetheless. So we're coming to SoccerX. What can we do to prove to you guys how powerful we are in terms of influence in the youth market in the UK? And we were thinking, we want to do something in sports. And so we were looking at what's happened this year within the transfer market, and we were thinking about this image of, you know, Arsenal fans begging Wenger to spend money, and he's one of the only managers who didn't buy an outfield player this year. And so we thought, you know what we can do on social media? We can make Arsenal fans wish come true. We can make Wenger spend. So we need a player. So we created a player last night. There was four of us sat in the office. We called him Rex Secco. Anagram of SoccerX. Meet Rex Secco, 16-year-old, French, maybe South American, I'm not really sure, player who was likened to David Costa. We created this image, and we, one of our assets we used on social media. Takes him 606 minutes to score a goal. Price tag, 34 million. Arsenal fans had asked Wenger to spend, so we were doing the spending for him. And we showed how he was one of the most expensive players ever. For his age. And then we pressed our magic social chain button and we broke the internet. And within a minute, thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world started talking about Rex Secco, this signing. Who the F is Rex Secco? Arsenal fans are so amazed. What's this 16-year-old? Who's Rex Secco? 34 million for Rex Secco, ha 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 ha. And this went on and on and on. And thousands of tweets from all around the world started to roll in about this player, Rex Secco, an anagram of SoccerX, and why Arsenal had bought him for 34 million. Some people were really excited to see him play. They said he was going to be like the next Henri. And then it broke into the top trends on Twitter last night at about 8 p.m., which was 15 minutes after we started talking about Rex Secco, came in at number 8 to start with, and it started moving up the trends. Here's Arsenal fans talking, people laughing at Arsenal for spending so much money. A girl saying, you know, I'm 16, I get £3.80 as a wage. And talking about how much he must be getting paid. And then people started to comment on Rex Secco and how good of a signing he was. Some people were saying he has great ability. And this one guy said, man, no one has a clue about this Rex Secco. But that's not necessarily true, because this Jan guy could have sworn he'd seen him play. Jan said he's real quality and we'd love to have him at Liverpool. What a great signing for Arsenal. And then it moved further and further up the trends. And it now broke into the top 5 trends on Twitter. This is last night. And then it spread across the internet. It started going to Reddit, and people on Reddit were asking, what's this story about Rex Secco? Who is he? What's he like? And then a very respected news media company, Breathe Sport, did a piece on him laughing at Arsenal for spending so much money on Rex Seco. Again, this is all last night on social media. And then the Daily Star weighed in on it and said, you know, we need to explain the story. They started digging into it. Who is this Rex Seco? Why is he coming up nowhere on Google? And they finally discovered that this might be a hoax. And then the narrative started to turn again. One-on-One Goals, who have millions of fans, did a piece saying it was all a hoax and produced a compilation article on that. Unilad, they have 8 million fans across social media. They produced a piece about how it was fictitious and how Arsenal fans had been fooled. The Metro weighed in on the story as well, producing a piece of content 2 hours after we broke the story about Rex Seco, calling it all a hoax and saying that the internet had been fooled. Bet365 as well laughed at Arsenal fans for it trending. And if you search Google right now for Rex Seco, as of last night, he's now a very, very hot story in the UK. So this is the social chain. I'm going to explain quickly, if I can, how this all began. I was, symbolizes my mum. I was 18 years old. I came to Manchester to study business. I ended up dropping out after one lecture because I had a business idea for a social media website for students. It was kind of like Gumtree for students. So I called my mum up and I said, Mum, I'm dropping out of university. My mum's Nigerian, so you can kind of understand how that conversation went. And this was the website, Wallpark. The idea was to bring students together in one place. And when it came to marketing Wallpark, we had no money. So we had to look at other ways to market. And we're young people, so we didn't necessarily believe in tradition. We didn't believe in print media, billboards, and those kind of things that were being offered at the time. And so I turned to social media, and it just so happened that hundreds of miles away, Don McGregor, who sat over here, had run out of toilet paper. And as you do when you run out of toilet paper, you start a Twitter page, which is what Dominic McGregor did, and he called it Student Problems. And it was to do with running out of toilet paper and having no money as a student. And this inspired this page. And at the time I saw it, it had 5,000 followers. The day after, it had 12,000 followers. And the day after, it had 25,000. So I sent Dom an email. I'm like, hey, I've got this student website. I can help you make some money from your Twitter page. And I met him, and he dropped out of university too. And we proceeded as two dropouts. And we went on to build all the biggest sort of community pages across Twitter and Facebook for students at the time, to the point where we were driving 1 million people to our website every single month. And then we exited the company. And we went off around the world. I was working in the Valley as a consultant for companies there. And we got Spotify approached us and said, hey, we've got a 50% off for Spotify premium. Would you guys promote it across your student network? We said yes. We let them do it. They came back 8 more times. We didn't really see it as a business. Just Eat approached us, said, we've got this offer for students. Can we use your student network? We said yes. Again, we didn't see it as a business until TippyTap showed up. TippyTap was an addictive application made by a guy in America. You had no money to promote it, and he asked us to promote it for him on our network. We said no, because we weren't willing to do it for free. And me and Dom sat in this restaurant in Manchester, and we realized that we hadn't spoke to each other in an hour because we were so addicted to this game. So we turned to each other and we're like, maybe we should promote it. And Dom said, you know, maybe we should do a revenue share. I said no, and I carried on playing this game for an hour. Eventually I came around to the idea, and we did a revenue share with the guy. Sent him a contract, he sends it back, 50-50, and then we said, let's go about promoting it. And we owned so many of the big social media pages in this country at the time that we thought, to get people to download this game, we're not going to have to post a link to the App Store. In fact, we're not even going to have to tell people to download it. If we just cause a huge amount of hype around this game by just talking about it, people will download the game. So on the biggest, these are some of the accounts we own hundreds and hundreds of these accounts. The biggest Harry Potter page in the world with 400,000 fans talked about it in a Harry Potter way. The Sims pages talked about it in a Sims way. The biggest student pages in the world all talked about it in a student way. Our British pages likened it to David Cameron, said it was addictive and not to download it. And it resulted in this huge amount of hype. 100,000 tweets, 100,000 downloads in the first 8 hours. It went to number one in the App Store. It went to number one in the UK trends. It trended worldwide. The next day, BBC News featured it. It did 2 million downloads and made hundreds of thousands in revenue in the first month and even more in the second month. And we were pretty blown away by that. So we formulated a hypothesis. Just like I'd found Dom when he had run out of toilet paper, there's got to be kids all over this country who have made these massive social assets in their bedrooms. And we wanted to bring them all together. And in total now, we have 20 of them. They all work in our office in London or Manchester. And they were the kids that started all the big assets, that all these community pages that everybody followed. An example, Connor, 19 years old, sat in his bedroom. He had built this page on the left, Love Food, which now has 5 million followers. just for fun. He'd also built BeFit Motivation, one of the biggest fitness pages in the world, just for fun. He'd built out a bunch of other pages called under the BeFit brand, just for fun, across Instagram and Facebook. And when I met him, he was like, I owe my mum 30 quid. Can you guys help me? I'm like, you've got 15 million people at your fingertips. How can you owe your mum 30 quid? When he does a post of a pizza on Love Food, it'll get 200,000 likes on Instagram, and 15 to 50,000 people will comment. And so we brought him into our network. Hannah, again, she was off to be a primary school teacher when we met her. She's a huge Harry Potter fan, so she'd made the biggest Harry Potter page in the world. She'd made a YouTube video about how this has blown up overnight, and it's got 400,000 followers now, and it's one of the most engaged Harry Potter pages in the world. And she'd also made the Sims page, and because she was off to be a primary school teacher, she was tweeting from the playground on her placement, nostalgic things that are still relevant now from our childhood. And this primary school problems page had blown up. And same with Cahill. Some of you might know this medieval reactions page. This is ultimately the reason why BuzzFeed discovered we existed. It's one of the fastest growing community social media pages we've ever seen. It took just over 100 tweets for it to get 400,000 followers. Some of the tweets on there have got 35,000 retweets. And we've actually had this spray printed onto one of our walls in Manchester. And then we went off to celebrities as well. So the first person we ironically signed was Frankie Kokoza. He was dating my ex-girlfriend, and she's now a good friend of mine. So she said to me, you know, Frankie's got millions and millions of followers, but he's unfortunately sleeping on his friend's sofa and has got no commercial work whatsoever. Can you guys help him out? And then fashion influencers, huge community of influential girls under lifestyle and fashion. We hired three of them and rounded up a community of 270 of them in total. YouTubers, when I made this presentation initially, we hadn't signed any of these, but now we've signed a huge amount of the hottest young YouTubers in the country, including all the ones you see here. Sports influential communities. And this is a really interesting piece. So as a lot of you will know, there's these really influential sporting communities across Facebook and Twitter. And so we went about acquiring and building as many of them as we could. One of those was BBC Sport, who's made by Nick at the back of the room, one of the fastest growing ever sort of parody sports communities out there. We brought Nick into the team to head up this whole operation, and he stood over there, I believe, at the back. And we built this huge network of influential sports communities, and this is ultimately what made Rex Seco so big last night on social media. Snapshot of what the network looks like in total, and out of that network, The Social Chain was born, a young agency that doesn't believe in doing things the traditional way. We believe in challenging tradition through disruptive, social, explosive marketing. And within 10 months, we were working with some of the largest brands in the country. A lot of that was to do with the results that we've driven. So for Fox, every time we talk about a Fox movie, the internet breaks. It goes to the number one trend. We get 1 million trailer views in 4 hours. And that welcomed E1 into a conversation with us, and Disney, and Universal, and those guys. And we promoted Sinister 2 for E1 last week. It went to the number one trend on Twitter. It trended for 10 consecutive hours. 100,000 people tweeted about the return of Sinister 2 after we did our thunderclap, and they broke their box office numbers on the opening weekend and beat every film in cinemas that weekend. But this is all great. And then we looked at sports and the impact we could have at sports. And we knew that within sports itself has been challenging tradition for many years. We started with teletext, and now consumers can get live video updates to their mobile. And it's not just digitally that they're challenging tradition, it's also on the pitch itself and the introduction of vanishing spray and goal line technology and such. So we wanted to see how we could challenge tradition within sports. And we looked at the kind of content that fans were engaging with and saw that it wasn't necessarily the branded content that got the most engagements. It was the fan content, the historical nostalgic photos and videos, the banter on social media before the games and so on. And so we sat down and looked at the ways that Social Chain could bring that same disruption as we've had in other industries to sports. And we looked at the way we could make players huge success stories, hugely successful on social media overnight. We could build teams' social media presences. We could build leagues from different countries into having a huge social presence here in the UK. We looked at the fact that we could make people change from BT Sports to Sky News potentially if we talked about that game while it was on social media. And so a few weeks ago, we wanted to build a case study for SoccerX. So we took Alex McCarthy, who's one of the influencers who we work with, and we produced a piece of content for his social media channel. And we tweeted that out onto his channel and then amplified it across the social chain. And Alex, who has 20,000 followers, got 1 million impressions every single day on that one piece of content, which is 200 times more than he's ever got before. The tweets he received back from fans, because of the nature of the content, made him a fan favorite at the club. And his social media presence has grown astronomically since then. And that was just a case study of how we can take a player, make the player bigger, and hopefully increase his transfer value and his perception amongst his fans. But it's not just players. The AS Roma business director talked about how if it wasn't for social media and their presence there, they wouldn't have been able to garner such a big deal from Nike for their T-shirt sponsor. And so we looked at also the way that social chain can have a huge impact in TV and broadcasting. And this is a really cool case study. It's a case study we did with Impractical Jokers, which is a Comedy Central TV show. And they came to us and said, listen, we're releasing Impractical Jokers season 2. We want you guys to help us make this a huge thing. That was the brief. And so we looked at the social chain and what we're able to do. And we produced over 100 pieces of content, lined them all up to go out across our communities at the same time. And we broke Impractical Jokers and Comedy Central's records. We achieved higher numbers than they'd achieved in the last 4 years. And we received this thank you email from Matt at Comedy Central saying, you'd have to go back to the golden days of 2.5 Men to see numbers like that. And since then, we've worked with Comedy Central on a number of releases and also worked with the likes of ITV at the moment. We're doing some pieces with them on how we can get people to switch on a channel through social media and through creating a huge amount of hype. So this is a social chain. There's more than 50 people now working at the social chain. The average age is 23 years old. We're just a bunch of kids at the end of the day, so they say. Every day our network grows by 380,000 people. That's someone liking, favoriting, or subscribing to one of our channels. We've recently raised major investment to accelerate our growth across European markets, coming to Berlin, France, Spain. And they say, we're just kids, and that's true. And someone once said, as you guys will know, I can see from your faces, that you can't win anything with kids. But what did they know? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Well, that's impressive. The Rex Echo thing, I believe it completely. One thing, you are 23 years old is the average age of the people of your company. You are digital experts, digital netocrats.
Yeah.
And you are talking with digital audiences like you.
Yeah. Okay?
And you are an expert in that area. But what are the most difficult things that you find when you work with this type of communities? Consider that you are like them and you're an expert, but what are the more difficult things?
So one of the hard things, especially when working with these communities and working with big brands, is getting brands to understand the payoff if you let yourself go a little bit on social media. And I'm talking about the way you communicate with the fans. And so what we found has been so successful for the social chain is the way that we're able to bring our narrative and the way we speak to the fans' levels. And that's done by allowing fans and the people you're talking to write the messaging. And I think the big success of the social chain in general has been the fact that it is young people talking to young people. So when we write a promoted post for Spotify across our networks, we don't allow Spotify to give us that message. We'll write the message how we'd say it to our friends, and Spotify will sign that off. And that's the way I think, you know, that we've really managed to grow so quickly in this space and achieve such big results. It's because it's young people talking to young people as opposed to the brands trying to communicate with the fans.
And these young people is consuming football the same way that we older people are consuming football?
I think there's a little bit more of a social element to it. I mean, I don't watch a football match anymore without a couple of other screens open. And we'll also have our conversations within WhatsApp as well, and we'll be talking about the banter and so on. But it's a lot more social, I think, in the youth space. And also the kind of conversation is a lot more informal and less, what's the word, PG.
There is nothing more different like your company and a football club, because a football club is a very traditional entity and stuff like that. Mm. So if you were thinking about what you will need to change, you are working already with football clubs. There are many things to change, but if you need to, just the most important thing that a football club need to change, what it will be?
So, I mean, I asked Nick and Alex at the back, I said, why has sports been such a compelling proposition for the social chain, and why are we doing this? And so, and they responded to me and they said, because ultimately we want to bring fans closer to the teams and to the clubs and to the brands and integrate them a lot more. And I think that's the one thing I'd change. So instead of having, say, your social media manager running your Twitter account on game day, why don't you give it to 10 fans to run? Or why don't you give it to 5 fans to run? It's risky, I know. But if you know you coach them a little bit on what the kind of thing
it's risky.
It's a much more authentic message, and therefore I think the results will be significantly better, in my opinion, from what we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions from the audience, please? You have an opportunity here. This is the future of your of your business. So, this is the people who is going to consume it. Sir, please. Excuse me, there is a microphone there for you. Don't worry. Please, if you can tell us your name.
Sure, yeah. Edward Fuller from Media Bodies.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you ever find the integrity of the tweets is ever sort of questioned by the sort of all the people that you're influencing, whether or not they're like, oh, another thing that they're pushing me towards, or is it so irregular that it's
all
okay?
You know what, there's 2 points there. The first point is irregularity, but the second point is the type of things we talk about. We only talk about things that are relevant to the communities. So on our food networks, people follow those communities because they want to see pictures of pizza. So in that community, we won't talk about sports, we'll talk about pizza, burgers, and anything that's relevant to that community. And so before we started working in the entertainment industry with the biggest entertainment companies, we were posting movie trailers to scary films because that's newsworthy. And now we do it, but it's ultimately sponsored by a brand. So it's seamless in that approach, and that I think that's what doesn't sort of provoke a, you know, yeah, any sort of resentment, yeah.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Another one? Yes, ma'am, please.
Hi, I'm Pam Collins from Atlanta, Georgia, Collins Sports Group. Are you going to fess up about Rex?
No, the internet knows now. The media swooped in, and the Metro and all these newspapers have done a number of pieces about Rex Secco. And if you go on Twitter now, everyone knows that Rex Secco isn't a person. And even some people were smart enough to say, wait a minute, that's an anagram for Soccer Rex. I think we saw 10 tweets across social media where someone had, I don't know who was able to do that, probably staff of SoccerX, but they figured out that it was an anagram of SoccerX in the end as well. So we didn't need to tell them. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. It was very, very interesting. This is the future of the sport, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
so you.
You
have to take
thank
a look.
So much.
Thank you very much. You're very,
thank
you. Very, very good. Very, very nice. Well, to finish, we are going to have a one-on-one conversation. Our final guest. Well, not every service has more than 1.5 billion users each month. 1.5 billion users each month. Launched in 2004, Facebook has made its mission to make the world more open and connected. People use Facebook to stay in touch with friends, family, to discover what's going on in the world, and share and express that what matters to them. And a lot of things that happen in the world and matters to people is football. To discuss about this, we have Glenn Miller, when we are going to have a discussion with him about engaging millions that require not only content, but also adequate distribution strategies, measure the right things, and have a move fast startup approach. Glenn is the head of sports and entertainment partnerships Europe and Middle East for Facebook, and he has a long experience in sales and marketing strategies in companies such as Ticketmaster Entertainment, AAG Live, and CAA. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Glenn Miller.
Yes, we are going. All right, done with the presentations today.
Yes, thank you, Glenn, for being here.
Thank you.
That's very, very good for you. We have been talking a lot about this engagement. That is one of the most used concepts nowadays. It's a buzzword. Everyone uses it. And we have seen the numbers. Facebook is an engaging machine. But for all the experience that Facebook has as a company, what is really engagement? What is behind engagement?
I don't know. It's interesting. I think when you look at engagement, there's so many different ways to define it. At the very core of it on Facebook, it's a like, a comment, a share, a video view, or something we realize now is that a lot of people are taking in the content but never taking an action. And so how much time you spend on a post is now engagement, right? If you look at some of the marketers, you know, to them, engagement is, was I able to post something and get them to open up their wallet to pay for something, and so now I've made money. But for us at the core, it's actually someone taking your content and wanting to, quote unquote, engage with it. So did they read it? Did they watch it? Did they hear it? And so for us, when we're looking at engagement, we want your content to get out to as many people as possible.
So there is a problem that maybe us football clubs have with this focus in fans, having the ones who have more many followers, more many fans. What other tools, what other insights will be interesting for us to look at Facebook? Because Facebook is offering more than that.
Yeah, and I think it's important when you think about Facebook. It's like Facebook for us is ink, right? We've got the blue app, which is what I think most people think about when they think of Facebook. We've also got Instagram. We've got WhatsApp. We've got Oculus, so all the virtual reality stuff. So that's actually all Facebook. When we're thinking about tools that people are missing out on, there's actually, I think, a lot. Because I think when we look at how organizations are setting up, is they're setting up for Facebook of last year. And then next year, they'll be setting up for what Facebook is now. And so, you know, we quickly change and pivot what we're working on. So one of the biggest things for us is video and being able to look at your insights and understand, is video working for you? How do you get more video on there? Who's watching my content? Who's engaging with it? And I think insights on Facebook is a hugely missed opportunity, because some people think, oh, I can see what time of day people are looking at my content, or I can see what countries they're from. But the more that you work with us, we actually say, to me it's very exciting with a marketing background, is we end up having the most data on your fans than yourself or anyone will ever have, because it's their true identity. When people fill out surveys, they want to be seen or perceived a certain way. When they're on Facebook, they're on them as their true self. And so we get to see easily, you know, what mobile devices do they use, what brands do they like, what music do they listen to, and depending on who we're working with, sometimes they program their stadium based on the music interests that we have in our insights. Or I think a good one, like England Rugby, we've been doing their Sweet Chariot campaign, so the Carry Me Home is actually turned into Every Voice Counts. And so if you've ever gone to any of the England home matches, you will see that they're trying to get everyone to record themselves singing Sweet Chariot, which then has turned into the official single that was released today. And the only way to be a part of it was via Facebook. And what we found out was that, looking at the insights, the top two artists for England Rugby were actually Ollie Murs or Ella Eyre. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going with Ella Eyre, who now sang it. So it's really easy to make these decisions based off of the insights, but a lot of people don't think to check the insights. Or even with a working relationship with Facebook, we can provide this data if we're working with you. But it's also, what do you want to do next? Where do you want to go? Are you looking to get into a new market and you haven't sold a global brand there? How can our data help you go out there and identify new brands in different markets and sell to them? And I think that world's very fascinating.
And this is something that football clubs don't take advantage of full, you think? Or?
I don't think that football clubs take advantage of that fully, because one, it's, you have to request it from us, all of our privacy laws and everything. But once you have that data, a lot of people don't know necessarily what to do with it. And, you know, it's, imagine if you went in today and someone handed you a list of, here's all the brands that your fans like in the UK. You know, a million light bulbs would go off. But a lot of times the question back to us is, okay, now what do I do with these brands? Mm-hmm. And for us, we want to go, okay, what are your objectives? Like, we're not the football club. We're the platform that's helping you reach all of these people. But let's use this data to help you make better decisions and hopefully help you make more money.
Okay, but there is one thing behind and related to that. That is, for example, the organic reach of Facebook. The organic reach has been reducing, and you maybe can think that you have 40 million fans in Facebook and your football club and you're going to reach all of them. That's not true. But maybe these insights can help you to be more precise and more rich. That's a real opportunity. That's something. Why this happened in the organic reach, and why? Yeah. What football clubs needs to do to confront this situation?
Yeah, so organic reach, it's organically going down, right? It's not a lever that Facebook is pulling or anything like that. If you think about it, the average person has about 1,500 stories on Facebook they could see a day, and they end up being served about 350, because that's all that they could take in as a human in the amount of time that they're spending on Facebook every day. So it's more competition for the newsfeed. If you're thinking there's 1.5 billion people every month and now 1 billion people on Facebook every day, they're all publishing multiple stories a day. You know, the average football club does 13, 14 posts a day and translates them all into, on average, 7 languages. And so that's just one page. And so now you're competing against everyone else in the ecosystem. And what's most important in this ecosystem is the connection between real people. So Facebook was created because of you and your friends and how you want to connect with them. And then that's grown, and we've just happened to continue listening to our users to build a platform that's scaled globally. And then now we've got their interest in there, and their interest is football. It might be some artists that they listen to. And now you're competing with friends. And so one of the things that what we always say is, when we're thinking about it, is a lot of the football clubs, sports, and especially entertainment does this terribly, is they use it purely as a marketing channel. And we always say, imagine if your friends started posting, buy this ticket today, watch this video, you know, download this single, what would you do? You'd probably unfriend them. And so these the users on Facebook are looking at the clubs and looking at the entities and the brands as real people. And you have to treat them in that way. And I think that's where some of the hardships, I would say, with the algorithm kick in, is because people are using these big channels just to market to them.
That's
when
right.
in actuality, they need to build that one-to-one relationship with them, which Facebook allows at scale.
Part of make this relationship, the create relationship, is providing interesting things and relevant things. And one of those things maybe is the content that we produce. We are somehow limited because we have already sold our broadcasting rights and stuff like that. But you have been working extensively with entertainment, with other sports, et cetera, et cetera. What content is relevant for a football fan beyond the highlight? Because we cannot use the highlight every day, and we cannot be having conferences with Cristiano Ronaldo every day. What other things that we must look at?
I think let's look at the game first. So if you're looking at the game, what we've seen is the biggest conversation starts right when the squad's announced. So we saw, as Julian was saying, it used to be people were just typing out who the squad lineup was. Then they went to photo, and now because video on Facebook is so massive, they switch it to exactly what you see on TV. But then they come back and just do, text, oh, I scored a goal, or whoever scored a goal. And then they go dead silent once the match is over, or they do a photo gallery. And what we've seen that there's three moments during a match that someone should pay attention, and the club should really be involved. One is the lineup announcement. Two are the highlights during the match, because at the end of the day, the fan doesn't want minute-by-minute updates. Like, we've seen this time and time again. They want to see what are the big moments, and those tend to be, it's start of the second half, it's full time, it's a goal, it's a penalty, whatever those are, that's what fans want. And they want you to share that content so they can all aggregate around it and have a conversation. But then the biggest moment is when people are either really upset or really happy at the end of the match. And that's normally always when clubs go dead silent. And one of the ones that we went really hard with this on was Arsenal and created, if you go after any home match on their Facebook page, within an hour of the game ending, they do the final whistle. And so it's a 2-3 minute video show on Facebook where they have a player that comes in, they get interviewed for 2 minutes with questions from Facebook, Instagram, and they talk about the match. And so now, if they're trending, this content's always at the top. You have to look for those opportunities to be a part of the conversation instead of trying to create one on your own, right? Everyone's got their routine every single day. They might wake up, take a shower, check Facebook, go to work. You have to be a part of that routine. So you need to interject yourself into the conversation that's happening. Outside of the match, people love training. People love, seeing the announcements and all that fun stuff. But where I think there's a big missed opportunity is being able to work on the broader football ecosystem. Because a lot of times with the clubs, they're so afraid of getting the footballers to do things. They're afraid of working with the pundits or any of the legends. But at the very center of that is the club. And then the next level of fans that you can get is going to come from the players. And then the next level is coming from the brands and then the legends and the broadcasters.
It's an ecosystem.
And the ecosystem. And I think if clubs can work more closely with the ecosystem, they're not only going to reap the benefits on engagement, but they're going to get more data, be able to sell more commercial opportunities to these fans, because there's so many more out there than just those who like their page. We have almost 500 million football fans on Facebook each month, and on Instagram, it's 1 out of 10 people are connected to a football account on there. So the opportunity is huge. But if you're a club and you only have 10 million people on there, but one of your players might have 20 million, we can see, there's a good one that we were looking at where the club actually had 30-something million, the player has 25, but only 1.5 million of the player's fans actually like the club. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big opportunity because the average sport fan likes six players, five clubs, and one league. And so, you have to remember there's a hardcore fan and then there's a casual fan. The casual fan can't name the best 11 or anything like that. You're lucky that they know a few of the top players and they might know a couple of the clubs. And so that casual fan is liking tons of players, tons of clubs, and now it's up to you to go and use the leverage for who you've paid for, which is your player.
Is that the tone of voice is important because you usually follow people and players are people. Football clubs have enough people.
Yeah.
What did football clubs need to change in the way that they talk to the fan, the tone and manner of the communication?
Yeah, so we always say, fans on Facebook see the clubs as people. That's no surprise, right? They will bleed for them. And we think it's really important that, one, you take the values of the club and turn it into a voice, and that voice needs to stay consistent with all posts. you know, when you have a commercial post, you shouldn't change your tone or the way you're speaking just because now you have a sponsor post. Because at the end of the day, that sponsor post written in a different tone is actually going to decrease your engagement, because fans are going to go, oh, this isn't the club. They're just required to do this. So then they'll stop engaging with the post. You need to be able to find your voice and then create content that stays with that voice while still knowing that you have to do commercial commitments, et cetera. But what's best for those fans? What I've found a lot is that a lot of the clubs are hiring journalists to run their pages, and they write Facebook updates or even Instagram updates, which is even more fascinating, as if it's a news article. They'll put, you know, watch this video, and every time there's a video, they'll say, watch this video. Yes. And it's like the fan sees it's a video. You don't need to tell them it's a video. But you have to talk to them as if they're a person. And I think if you're writing for a newspaper, that doesn't translate to a Facebook post. There's other tools on Facebook that work for writing that type of content.
That's a good example, because Facebook is not only Facebook. Things are getting more streamlined and more straight. Instagram, for example. Instagram, we were talking, I think it has more engagement than Facebook, and it's just pictures.
Yeah, so Instagram content, like, it goes so well. People love photos, right? If you think about a lot of the footballers, they don't have to worry about what they're going to say. They just have to worry about posting the right photo. And the thing that works the best that we've seen in sports is, we say, just better together. So the moment there's a photo with more than one person in it, it just explodes on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we think that what's really key there is that Instagram's built to download so quickly the photos. Everyone used to say, why is it a square? And now we rolled out to do vertical and horizontal images, but you can't zoom in on them. And it's because when you're thinking about the hundreds of millions of people around the world who are using it, their service is only X capacity. And so we have to get that photo to you so quickly. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget when they're working with Facebook or Instagram, is that we're managing such a large audience that if we do something to aggregate an audience on Facebook, we have 1.5 billion people to upset. And so all the stuff that we're doing is based off of the feedback that we get from the users. I'll never forget when Photos launched on Facebook. We didn't have photos, and what we saw was people were changing their profile picture to show where they were. And so that we do hacks overnight where engineers got together, and literally they go from about 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., they get pizza, everyone comes together, they have these ideas, and they build a prototype. And photos came out, and then they launched the next day.
Then
we got the feedback. People wanted to upload multiple photos. People wanted to tag friends. And so the product continued to evolve. And that's the way we think about everything at Facebook, is we need to launch something, get the feedback, and then continue to build it based on how users are using it.
That's the thing, because the problem is that, this is what we say, football clubs are not startup companies. They don't have this approach and this thing. It's the same question that we have for Steve. If there are something that the clubs needs to change beyond the competences, beyond that you need maybe journalists who type, who don't put video or stuff like that, thinking about culture and strategic vision, what did you think a football club needs to approach this type of thing to be successful as Facebook?
There's two things. The first one is, I've seen that a lot of times digital is seen as a service instead of part of the core business. Mm-hmm. And digital is part of the core business. You know, it's like when you're separating newspapers from TV or even all of the traditional media, and then you put social media in a different bucket. You know, the worlds have collided and they're blended, and you have to treat it that way. You don't put together a marketing plan and go, let me ask the social guy for just this piece if he's not part of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other thing is, I would say and advise to take more risks, because so many things where things could be so much better is if there was less fear. And there's a lot of fear around posting something that the media might pick up or that someone's gonna take negatively. When in actuality, a lot of the things that they're afraid about only affects a very small amount of people in a region, but yet these are huge global brands. And a lot of people will not know what the Mirror is in the UK or even outside the UK for that matter. And you have to think about that. You have to, yes, react locally, but you have to think with a global brand. Mm-hmm. And if you're not thinking globally, we see that your numbers aren't going to grow, your engagement's not going to get there, you're not going to get the commercial opportunity. And it's just really important to take more risk and, you know, forget about, you know, the fear that you have sometimes about what someone in traditional media might say.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of fear, and also the problem is that always this fear, you transmit that fear to your ecosystem. Yeah. That is important, about the players, for example. There are these guidelines that clubs are throwing up to the players. What are the things that really the player don't need to do? Yeah. Because if you start giving all the rules, the guys feel like this and they do nothing, you know? And
yeah.
What are the really things that the player need to understand to join a social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram? Because you have a lot of terror stories that you were telling me. What really is the thing?
Yeah, I think what we just try to tell everyone is, you know, you have to get them in the mindset that whatever they do is public. And so one of the things that we did was created a separate app on Facebook just for celebrities, public figures, that when they go in there, everything they do is public. So there's no wondering, am I on my personal profile? Am I on my public page? And I think we try to get people to understand whatever you're putting out there, someone's going to see. You have to give them a little bit of that fear, but you also have to let them understand it, because if they don't, then they're going to go post something that, you know, the club might go, hey, you shouldn't have done that, and then now they'll never post again. Mm-hmm. And I think they're so used to, when it comes to social media, they're so used to hearing, don't do this, don't do that. When a lot of times I think the conversation should be shifted as to, here's the great things we think you should do. I always hear from a lot of the footballers that they want to post a lot of pictures of them, you know, playing golf or going go-karting, or even just, there was a thing that was really popular on Instagram that was called I Woke Up This Way. It was a hashtag. And it was everyone, when they woke up in the morning, they would take a photo and post it with that hashtag. A lot of conversation. And a lot of the footballers were told, no, they can't do that because the clubs didn't like how they looked in the morning. And the only difference was some of them that have long hair, their hair wasn't done, right?
Yeah.
And so there's nothing actually detrimental to that. And I think people want to connect with them just like they connect with their friends, but you have to provide reasonable guidelines as to what they can do. Otherwise, they just shut down.
Yeah.
And what we end up finding is they have a private Instagram or Facebook account and don't tell anyone.
Then
the club asks to remove it, but it's their own private account.
It's almost impossible to do that. Who has less fear? The club or the sponsor? Who is pushing the limits here, based on your experience? You are working a lot with them.
Yeah, I think the brands should have less fear, but I think the brands don't always know the best content to publish that's going to talk to real people. You know, I remember sitting at CA and we were doing all these deals for a lot of our artists, and the brand still cared about the size of their logo. And it was like, the size of the logo isn't going to get someone to buy your product more. You know, fans see the brand as access. So how can the brand provide access? You know, one of the things we did with Samsung and Wayne Rooney, I remember, was he was opening up the Manchester store and they were going to go and do traditional interviews. And they wanted everything to live on the Samsung page. And we sat there and said, you're spending all this money to sponsor Wayne. And he's got way more. I think he's 10x, actually no, 100x in theirs, because they were only at like 300,000. He's almost 30 million. And so we're like, you spent all this money, but you're not even activating his fans. Mm-hmm. So we came up with one side pushing traditional media to do what they needed to do. We created a video series with him at the store here that lived on both Samsung's page, and then unique stuff went to Wayne's page. And so now the Samsung brand was brought into Wayne's territory, where he had his almost 30 million fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it gets interesting, is these brands need to do things where the fans are and need to do things that speak directly to the fans.
To the fans.
Yeah.
Well, that's maybe because, well, in football clubs, we always have these mature business models and we are looking always to our own belly and trying to do things like that way. One trend that goes with that is this thing that it says, it's me who has to have the fans in Facebook. I don't own the fans in Facebook because I don't have the email, I don't have the access. So there is all this trend that came from many years ago that says, many people say, no, you don't have to be in Facebook. You can have Facebook, but you have to develop your own CRM.
Yep.
You have to develop your own Facebook.
Yep.
Your Barcelona Facebook, your Arsenal Facebook. it's a standalone proprietary tool inside the club for CRM.
Everyone wants ownership.
Everyone ownership. Is this something that is logical? This is a trend. Nowadays, there are big football clubs that are closing deals with big technology companies and part for sponsorship, and part of those deals are based on that, create the ownership CRM system.
Yeah.
Is this something logical? Is this something that...
I think there's two parts here. I think one is, you know, Facebook has built a platform to allow anyone, whether it's a club, a footballer, a brand, a musician, to come on board and utilize all the tools. Everyone has the same access to all the different tools on Facebook. We don't build something out because you're bigger or smaller or spend more money. Everyone has the same access to the tools. So we've listened to the audience and we've built this huge community of 1.5 billion. And now that they're here, you know, I think what you've seen in earlier presentations is people want you to tell your fans, like, we're here, and drive traffic to them. I think that's where Facebook was 11 years ago when we started, was going, hey, we need you to drive traffic to Facebook. Tell your fans you're on Facebook. But then now, over the last decade, we've become the biggest country, the biggest web destination, et cetera. And now that they're here, it's up to the entity, so in this case, the club, to decide what do they want those fans to do. Do they want them to engage with the content on Facebook? Do they want to take them and have them sign up for CRM? Do they want them to buy something? The fans are there. You now need to take them and bring them into where you want them to go next. But one of the things that I would say is, when you think about why Facebook's grown, it's because of the feedback that we've gotten. We've given people a unique opportunity to talk to their friends, talk to their family, and talk about things that interest them. If you're taking them out of their routine, you better have a really amazing reason as to why they should break their routine and go into your experience. Yeah. And I think a lot of times, you know, we see it that the world is mobile first, but a lot of people haven't built mobile websites, or they think the app is the be-all, end-all. Yeah. But getting someone to download an app and keep using it is really hard. Really, I mean, we know it. We've created apps that don't always work, and we kill it and take the technology and use it on something else. But you need to think, great, I've gotten someone over to my website, or I've gotten someone over to my CRM tool. Now what am I doing with this data? Them clicking share my data with you, that's a big move for them. And now you have their trust. And what are you going to do with that? And I think that's where a lot of the clubs need to step up, is if you're getting them to share your data, that's a big move for them. What are you doing to keep them there?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we are discussing. We are, clubs are talking about all this CRM, but we are keeping receiving the same emails, you know,
without
personalization.
Yeah, and the other thing too, you know, back on the web, the mobile websites, is we've seen on average a mobile website takes about 7 to 9 seconds to load, and that's already, you know, 5 to 7 seconds too long for most web for most mobile users. And so, you know, we sit there and go, you know, no one. I always forget the phrase, but something like no one else's problem, no one's problem is someone else's problem, something like that. And so we are helping out like the news industry with that, where we take all this traffic, we're the number one referral of traffic on the web, but they can't see your content. And so we sat there and said, how do we help you get your contact back in front of these people that we're driving traffic to? And so we created Instant Articles, which is in a test now, where so you have like The Guardian and Nat Geo, who publish thousands of articles a day. They load directly in Facebook. And so someone sees it, they tap it, the whole article's there. There's a rev share model, so they're still making their money. And at the same time, we're doing the deals with Comscore and all the tracking companies so that their web traffic doesn't drop, so that they can still sell it. But now with the new traffic that they're getting from Facebook.
You have made all the circle completed. That's a good idea. At the end of the day, but Facebook is a big CRM system. The thing is that you are offering the clubs the possibility to use all your insights to make, for example, a sponsor post and try mm-hmm. or sponsor message, and use all the insights that are very powerful to have in Facebook. But this is a problem of knowledge. Clubs don't know that.
Yeah, and there are so many tools even just outside of insights. You know, we heard from a lot of our partners that they didn't like that during a live match that the post would still show up in newsfeed after the match was over. Mm-hmm. And so we rolled out to everyone what we call post end date time. So you can go when you're making your post, you can select a date and time, and that post stops showing up in newsfeed. You know, some people go, oh, but that's going to decrease my engagement, et cetera, because it doesn't have a shelf life of forever, and now that shelf life might only be the 90 minutes of the match. But we're giving people more control of the content they're posting.
Yeah. It's a thing of knowledge and understand how to use the tools. Are there any questions, please, from the audience?
It's always the quiet part out here is the questions. Huh? Questions are always quiet here. We've got one.
There is a question there. Sir, please.
Hi, it's Casper from One Football. There's one question. You mentioned that from the 30 million Wayne Rooney followers, you did this Samsung piece and posted it on the Wayne Rooney page. How many actually of those 30 million engaged with that Samsung piece, or on average with those brand pieces?
Yeah, it really changes. So I would say on Wayne, I mean, on a lot of football, I will say we tend to see when it's the individual footballer, a lot of their content will actually reach more people than like their page. Like a good example, like Aaron Ramsey, like his posts generally reach more people than like the 5 million people that like his page. Every content is different, but if you're talking about commercial content, there are things that actually we learn from the habits of the fans. And so with commercial, you tend to see less engagement because the fan goes, I'm okay seeing this content, but why aren't you showing it to me as an ad? Like, you're taking advantage of this spot in my newsfeed. I don't want to see it. So we look at negative feedback from users. And that negative feedback might be that they're hiding a post or they're completely ignoring the post. And so what we're trying to do is get the best content that you're publishing in front of those people. And if there is a brand content or a commercial opportunity, that content better be just as good, or they should just be, you know, promoting it, right? Because then the user gets used to that. We don't want a user to go, oh, wow, all they do is market to me. So now I see a fourth commercial post, and they click the button and click hide all. Because now there's no way for you to get that user back. And so we're trying to prevent people from clicking hide all, which is why tone of voice, the way you write, the quality of your content is ever so important.
That's a very important, there's a point inside all this thing that is the iterations that is happening. Because these gentlemen have launched Facebook, but they are, as you're listening, they are testing every time what people is using, what they are not using, how they are behaving, and taking that information in real time, they are reshaping in real time the product. The things that happen in usual companies or football clubs that is that we launch the website, or we launch the app, and we don't touch it in, six months, 1 year,
or longer than that.
So that's not possible. You don't grow to 1 billion users. You don't grow to a streamlined application, launching the thing and leaving it go. You created it. You developed it.
And I think there's another tool too that we saw is you think your fans like everything you're doing, but you might be posting about a car sponsor. And so maybe instead of showing that post to everyone, maybe you target your fans who like cars. We saw this with BuzzFeed, right? BuzzFeed posts a ton of content on Facebook. All generally goes viral, except this one post that they made about this rapper Kendrick Lamar, and it bombed. No one engaged with it because the people that saw it first did not like Kendrick Lamar, started doing negative feedback, hiding the post. So what they ended up doing was reposting it, but they targeted their fans that like Kendrick Lamar. And this is a free tool. So if you go in and post on Facebook, you can select all of these different targeting mechanisms. And the post blew up because the initial people who saw it were people that were already interested in Kendrick. Mm-hmm. And so from there, they decided to share it, and their friends got to see it, and it just exploded from there. And that's the thing is, a lot of the content that's being shared on Facebook, when you post it, you know, videos, it's 53% of all views on Facebook come from shares. Not because they saw it on your post, but because someone clicked share on your page and put it on their own personal profile.
That's why the product needs to be shareable and needs to be interesting.
Yes. And it needs to be mobile. Most people are on mobile.
Because the thing that nowadays no one thinks in mobile content, mobile interfaces.
Yeah, out of all of our people, I think it's 1.3 billion out of them are on mobile every month. So that's more than a majority of our users.
Another question. The gentleman there, yes. There it goes, the microphone. Yes.
Hi, Glenn. Neil from Shot Glass Media. I wonder if you could share any information on Content ID system in terms of video. How far away is it?
So everyone can bookmark this page, media.fb.com. We put all of our announcements on there. We also put best practices up there. We announced last week that we're testing out our Content ID system with a few US partners because we're starting video monetization, and we know that before we do that, we need to make sure there's Content ID. So we have just started it, and it's with a very few number of people in the US, and then it'll continue to roll out from there. But you know, video for us is brand new when you think about it. December 2013, we had no one working on video. All it was like a button on Facebook, and you hope when someone uploaded a video file, it actually worked. Mm-hmm. And then now, fast forward, you know, our last number was April, which was 4 billion views a day. We had 3 engineers working on it, and it's just exploded from there. So this is something that we're ramping up really quickly, and we know we need to continue developing tools, and we'll get there, and we'll get there really quickly as we do with most things. But it does take time for us to get there, especially because we shift so much and see where the opportunity is and then take a team off of one project, move them to over here.
Yeah.
So it's very fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating in a way that is progressing.
You're always on your toes.
All the time and always working. All the time and always working. There is another one? Or? Yes?
Right there.
The lady, please. Madam.
Virginie Bernard from Loros. You talked earlier about the instant article. I'm quite interested in that. Do you have any timeline on where you will be launching that and where we will be able to start to use it?
Yeah, so we're still working. So it's in, we're moving to beta mode. So we were in alpha the last couple months and we're moving to beta mode. We don't have the exact timeline yet as to when it'll be available more broadly, but we are signing up more partners. The key thing there is, yeah, how many articles do you publish? Can you build a sustainable system to get these articles ingested into Facebook? And then how does the sales mechanism work? Because we all know with the ever-changing EU laws, we always need to be on our toes and deal with all the privacy and the data requests and everything. But we don't have an exact timeline as when we'll move out of beta into the open market. Mm-hmm. But there is a website. I think it's instantarticles.fb.com. And you can see all the information there. And I think they even take requests as well. So there's some people who are interested in it there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Someone else? I have one question that because I can try recollecting some idea. We're talking about the stadium. There is another trend. The one is the trend of the CRM, and I want to have ownership. And the other trend in football clubs is the connected stadium experience. And we are expending football clubs a lot of money in connected and provide Wi-Fi because we are telling the people that we have been told that people is going to use extensively social media. Yep. But you have been mentioning that Facebook is for Facebook, that is one of the bigger ones, is just for the beginning, the middle, and the end of the game. So is this Facebook for the fan who goes to the stadium, or is for the fan who stays at home?
So it's for both. So I think when you're at home, those are the moments that you want. And when you're in the stadium, you want to share your emotions, you want bragging rights, all those things that add value. What we've seen, though, is that it started out that people wanted to put text on the LED boards if they even had LED boards. And what we saw is text actually doesn't increase engagement. It has zero impact on what you're doing in a stadium. Instagram, interestingly enough, people share so many photos. That's an amazing mechanism to put on the screens, is because you want people showing their excitement. You don't want it to say, like, go England, Glenn Miller. Like, no one, at the end of the day, people don't really care about that. What we've seen, actually, this move towards are a couple things. One is aggregate information. So we've done it at, with Champions League, we've done it at their final, Formula One, and it's ranking the conversation. So it's which team is going to win. And so I remember last year in Lisbon, the conversation, there's more conversation happening around Atletico than there was around Real Madrid on Facebook. Yeah. And it was something like 70 to 30%. And that being shown on the LED boards made the Real fans go, I need to post more. And then it made the Atletico fans go, we're winning, need to post more here. Yeah. And so you've gotten people to engage with your content. The other part of that was that Formula One doing the racers and how they actually were stacking up on conversation, because you could see as the race was happening, people moving up and down depending on what was happening. And that got people to engage with your content. And that's what I think you need to think about when you're doing the connected stadium, is what's your end goal? If it's just to put a message up there, go sell it to a sponsor. Yeah. But if you're trying to get people to create more content, engage with your brand, then let's come up with the creative things. And we work with a lot of tools. We have internal tools for free things to create what we call InstaWall. So it's a plugin. You just type in a hashtag, approve a bunch of photos, automatically powers all your screens. Same we did it for with Man City and their tunnel cam, because their tunnel cam, some of the most watched content that they have. And we take over their screens and show all Instagram photos of their fans. And if you imagine, if it's photos, then next it moves to everyone clapping. Yeah. And so if you're walking out, you're getting the cheer before you actually walk into the stadium, because there's more fans who can't be there. Yeah. The other side of that, though, is the technology. We know when you go into most stadiums, you don't have access to internet. So we've been working on some like Facebook Wi-Fi things that allow, if you've got brought internet into the stadium, but you want to know how to let people connect, we have these little routers that you can plug in and let people sign in free through Facebook, and they automatically check in to your venue. So now you create a whole nother conversation. Or we've been testing out beacons, where you just set up different beacons around the stadium, and as long as they have Bluetooth, they walk by, connect to it, and you can push out any content. They can interact with it. Yeah. So we're creating our own opportunities, but we're using our API and third-party partners out there to develop really creative stuff. But again, I think what's really important is the aggregate and what do you want to get out of it, instead of just putting a message up there.
Okay. At the end of the day, it's about behavior. It's about analyzing what people is doing and work over that, not just all the assumptions and about what do you think that from your own vision of club needs to be done. Well, it has been a very great conversation, Glenn.
Thank you.
I appreciate it very much. Please give an applause to Glenn. He's also going to be around here, so please join him, approach and talk about him. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end. Thank you very much. I think it has been a very interesting afternoon. There are a lot of things that we have learned. The most important thing you keep in mind is that it's not all about techniques and about things and little stuff that you need to do in football clubs. Maybe it's a big change about the culture and about way that you do things, okay? That's important to take in account, and there is a big change ahead, so let's go. Have a nice afternoon and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you very much.